The Woj Pod is brought to you by Goodyear. Discovering the road ahead, Goodyear, more driven. The Ultimate Fighter is back, the reality show that brings top MMA prospects together under one roof to compete for a UFC contract is on ESPN+. Featherweight champ Alexander Volkanovski and Brian Ortega coach men's bantamweights and middleweights who have put their lives on hold for the chance to pursue their UFC dreams. Stream new episodes every Tuesday only on ESPN+. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com/UFC. Hey everyone, welcome into another edition of the Woj Pod. Here with USC women's basketball coach Lindsay Gottlieb, who spent the past 2 years with the Cleveland Cavaliers and had been at Cal Berkeley before that, led them to the 2013 Final Four. And Lindsay was the first NBA women's assistant who had come from the college ranks from a Power 5 conference. And now she's back in the Pac-12 at USC. We're here in LA where the sun's shining just like it always did for your 2 years in Cleveland. Lindsay, how are you?
I'm great. Looking out at the Staples Center here, but it's a thrill to be on with you, Woj. I'm not going to lie. The Woj Pod is something I listen to all the time, so I can't believe I'm on it.
Well, it's awesome to have you here, Lindsay. And take me back to, you didn't think lightly about going to the NBA and leaving Cal and making what was a dramatic career move 2+ years ago. What are you doing back in college basketball so quickly? I don't think that was your plan when you left for the NBA. How did it happen? Why are you back at USC? Why are you back in women's college basketball now?
It was definitely not in the plan, but as you know, in this profession, I don't know if anyone really lays out plans that go exactly in one straight line. So we were in the midst of sort of the tail end of the season in Cleveland, and I was focused on what we were doing there. Maybe I was thinking a little bit about what an offseason might be like and then getting right back into developing the young team that is there and being part of that. And I was sitting in our coach's locker room at the arena before our game against the Chicago Bulls, which happened to be my scout. And I took a break and just kind of scrolled through social media and saw that the guy that was the coach at USC, Mark Track, had decided to retire. And I kind of said, oh. And then in the same release, the AD at USC, Mike Bone, said, you know, this is the time, you know, we're going to commit to making USC women's basketball great again. And I sort of mentioned something out loud, and my guys in the locker room, the other coaches, like, oh, is that a good job? And I said, it is a good job. And that was about all I thought about it. And the next day we were, or maybe 2 days later, we were in Washington, we were in Charlotte, about to play the Hornets, and I got a text message. I had my own locker room on the road. You know, they usually put me in a separate locker room, and text message was direct from the AD, and he said, hey, Lindsay, we have a women's coaching opening and we'd love to talk to you. And I said, you know, I'd certainly be happy to talk. And that started a discussion which put me on this path. I think I would say this, Woj, going to the NBA, I did not know where that would take me. I didn't go there saying, I definitely want to be a head coach in the NBA and whatever it takes to get there. And I certainly didn't have a plan to use it as a way to come back to women's college basketball. I think in those 2 years, what hit me was, this is incredible. I'm learning a ton. I'm part of something. But I think I believed that I wanted to take that knowledge and be a head coach again before I did something else, like go to the front office or. And so if you know you want to be a head coach again and use that knowledge, you don't always get to decide when that call comes. And for me, I didn't know if it would be men's basketball or women's basketball, pros or college, but the USC brand being as iconic as it is and the opportunity to do something really special with women's basketball here, which has had so much success in the past, but maybe has been slightly dormant for a while, that kind of culminated in this being the time for me to make this move.
We'll talk more about USC and the job that's ahead of you here. Coming into the NBA at a time where there were women assistants on staffs, Becky Hammon in San Antonio, and a number of other women were coming up through the ranks, none quite with the path that you had taken. Some from the WNBA, some who had been in the video room with NBA teams and moved up and into different roles. What did you imagine the NBA might be like? And what initially did you realize, okay, this is something different than I imagined? What was it like at the beginning to come and walk in the door, not just being, certainly you come in as a woman, and that was new for anybody in Cleveland. They hadn't had a woman assistant coach. Many organizations have at least had one, but you're also coming from college basketball to the NBA.
Yeah, I think, to be honest with you, the initial differences that struck me the most were about that. The bigger differences were college to pro, and also for me going from being a head coach to being an assistant coach. Those were probably mainly my day-to-day differences, although the awareness is always there that you're the only of something in a room. I mean, Cleveland was, the guys I worked with were incredible. They made the situation for me as seamless as possible, but you know, it is a really interesting life experience to be sitting in a room where you're the only of something, and I think for the rest of my life that will make me a better ally and more empathetic. But the day-to-day differences probably came mostly in the form of the rhythms of the pro game rather than the college game, the way you approach work every day. Those are the things I think that was a really big adjustment, but really fun and just has expanded me as a coach. So in college, there are so many things that you do in addition to the X's and O's, right? From class scheduling to relationships with players in terms of everything from what they're going to eat for lunch sometimes, freshmen coming in, you know, to what their life plans are. Whereas in the NBA, I think it revolves around the X's and O's, player development, scouting, scheming, and also relationships with human beings, because this is a relational profession we're in. But that's pretty much it. And I think that was a really big difference. Also, just the rhythm of when you present scouting report information, when you practice versus when you don't, what the day-to-day look like. So, you know, with my teams in college, if we have a game on Friday night, we're prepping for 2 or 3 days for that opponent. In the NBA, you know, if you have a game on a Thursday night, you're beginning to talk about that opponent on Thursday morning in shoot around. It's just a really different rhythm to kind of catch as a coach. And that was really interesting to me.
Jeff Van Gundy, I remember him telling me this, talking about this when he became Knicks coach. And Jeff was a different kind of coach. He wasn't an ex-player. He was a little guy. He had been obviously a trusted Pat Riley assistant, and then Don Nelson took over. They let him go, and Jeff gets promoted. And, you know, he looked different than what people had seen as a head coach. And he would always say, players don't care what you look like. What they care about, are you prepared? Are you committed? Can you make them better? Now, that sounds good in theory, and you want to believe it. Is that what you hoped it would be when you got to the NBA as a woman and a college coach coming in? What did you find about what it was players wanted and how they responded to, like you said, your scouts, your coaching, your preparation, your film study with them? Was it the same as the women you coached? Is there something different they want out of a coach, or is it all the same?
I mean, I think Jeff is exactly right. I think he hits the nail on the head in terms of my experiences. What I found is that what elite athletes want in a coach, I found that it transcends gender and probably, you know, what your background is. Exactly what Jeff said. I think they first and foremost, you know, care, do you know what you're doing? And you cannot fake it with these guys. They are too smart. They are too nuanced. You know, do you know what you're doing? Are you prepared? Can you make me better? For sure. Those are the basketball, you know, aspects of it that matter to them. And then the second piece is, do you care about me as a human being? You know, are you invested in me? Do you see me as more than a basketball player? I would say those are the things that became very apparent to me that was the difference in whether or not these guys were going to respect me or connect with me. And that was really the seamless part, to be honest with you, and something that I think is really cool, you know, going forward, to be able to have that knowledge and that experience, and the relationships with the guys were something that I really cherished, and I think happened, you know, pretty quickly for me.
Did you find that there were a lot of players who were more comfortable because of their life experience with a female coach, or were comfortable with a female coach because in many of their lives, if they were raised by their mom or their grandmother had a big hand. There may or may not been a male figure in their life or one that they had full trust in. That was actually an advantage walking in the NBA if you were willing to put the time in and build a relationship with a player.
You know, well, it's hard for me to fully assess that because I've only experienced life through my own lens and my own body of sort of who I am. But I do think a couple of things. That in Cleveland, we had a particularly young team, so. You know, the idea of walking in with, you know, Colin Sexton and Kevin Porter Jr. and Darius Garland, who are 18, 19 years old, that's sort of been my wheelhouse and the people that I've dealt with for 20 years of my career. So I think there was an instant comfortability there. But also just even with, you know, the vets like Tristan and Kevin Love, I don't know with each person whether they would inherently connect more to a female. I found that sort of I had an ease in the gym of being able maybe to connect to them in some way, but it was different with each person, right? Like with Kevin, it might be a conversation over a meal. With someone else, it might just be a quick, you know, I don't know, they were like, I'd walk into the gym and give a guy a hug and that's what it was. I don't know if that's different than how the guys on our staff interacted. I just only know what I think you have to be authentic and comfortable in your own skin, and that's what I tried to be, and that helped me build relationships. But I do think for these guys, women play a prominent role in their upbringing, and so I imagine there's some connection there, and it is why I'm just shocked that men's college basketball Power Five coaches aren't running to hire, you know, women on the coaching staff, not just because I think you're always looking to find whatever resources or connection these elite players might use to make them be better. And so I do think if you find the right personality, having, you know, diversity of thought and experience in the realm of a female life experience would probably be helpful.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand slams, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code PARLAY and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code PARLAY. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Lindsay, going through a rebuild and being part where it's about player development and you know you're going to take some losses and you've got a young team like you had in Cleveland. And like you said, the games keep coming in the NBA. They just keep coming. And you can talk about player development and it's important, but you get on streaks where you lose 7, 8, 9, 10 in a row. What is that tenor like? And you, when you came in, John Beilein had come from Michigan. He had not been in the NBA before, and you're all going through that together. You know, you're coming from Cal, where you had been in the NCAA tournament every year. You had gone to a Final Four. You were advancing in the NCAA tournament. You hear rebuild when you walk in, and Kobe Altman at the gym, and they talk, and this is what we want. But when you're in the throes of it, and the losses are piling up, and there's a frustration that comes with players, you've got some veterans who are probably trying to be somewhere else. You've got young guys who are trying to establish themselves. What are all those dynamics like, especially with a new staff in the league?
Well, this is where the best word I can use for me is perspective. it has changed my perspective. You have to have perspective. And again, I sat in an assistant seat. Like, let's not, you know, pretend for 1 second that the pressures of sitting in that first chair are not 1,000 times greater than anyone understands. And so for me, coming into it, you know, moving, you know, those several inches over and not having to be the head coach actually allowed me to sort of have the perspective and see. Look, in college, you have 29 regular season games, and everyone matters like it's an elimination game. You ask any college head coach. Maybe it's, you know, to get into the NCAA tournament. Maybe you're a really good team and you're thinking about your seeding. And so you have this mentality. I mean, all of us who have coached in college can literally tell you details of any loss if you've been successful and not had that many. Then you come to the NBA, and there has to be growth through games, not just through practice. You have to almost recalibrate of what success looks like and how you can get players better. And, you know, quite honestly, I think, you know, watching Coach Beilein sort of experience that was really, really hard. You know, he had not lost many games before, and all of a sudden it's like you want to be able to fix it. You want to be able to get better instantly. That's not how it works in the NBA, because as you're getting your guys better and they are wonderfully talented 19-year-olds, you're not beaten. Teams with, you know, men who have been in the league for, you know, 7-8 years. And so I think you have to change your perspective and figure out what it is you're trying to accomplish in that locker room, what type of, you know, culture you're trying to build. And then at the same time, you know, these are very driven and talented players who want to see success on the court. So I think you have to kind of have command of that, of what are our goals? Where are we trying to get to? What does success look like? What are the measurables within the course of the game? And that's a really hard thing to do. And I think the experience of having tried to navigate that with a group and a staff was fascinating for me. And I think they're still going through it in Cleveland, and they'll get there, but at some point, right? And they will. You have to see the success on the floor for everyone to stay positive about it and feel like it's moving forward.
It feels like, Lindsay, people are measuring or want to measure success for the NBA with women's coaches in the league by a woman becoming a head coach. And that is one measure of success and progress. What are we missing when we think about what progress should look like after your experience in the league, about where there could be a better emphasis? Or, okay, the league has accepted women in as coaches in this way, but and have made you able to do it, but there's more that could be done away from the obvious. Is Becky Hammon, who was interviewed for several jobs and had a second interview in Portland, away from a woman, having the first woman head coach in the league?
Yeah. I mean, as you know, Woj, part of my, I don't say struggle, but part of my thought process in the decision to come back to college and take this job, I struggled, you know, did I do enough right in the league? Am I letting people down by not continuing to help break certain barriers in the league? Or, you know, was there something else for me there? And I had to kind of let go of some of that in terms of, to your point about success only being, you know, a woman becoming a head coach in the league. Because I think there are other things to be gained. So for me personally, now going back to college, I hope I can be part of, you know, helping to sort of be part of showing the synergy that basketball is basketball, right? So now my life is interesting. I have my NBA players hitting me up to work out in the gym, or friends who are still in the playoff series. What do you think about this? While I'm also, you know, coaching, you know, Alyssa Pilley, who was a Pac-12 Rookie of the Year, of how do we get her to the WNBA? So I think that's part of, you know, now saying success looks like maybe making people see basketball as basketball, whatever level. If you can coach it, you can coach it. If you can help players, you can help players. In terms of within the league, you know, I think the NBA has been the most progressive professional, you know, male professional sports league around saying, you know, Adam Silver leading the mentality of, we need to consider women if we're going to have the highest talent pools, right, in any area, officiating, coaching. And I think the NBA believes that. And then I think there are front offices who say, hey, our coaching staff is going to be better the more diverse that we are. then it's when you actually get women in the building. What does that look like for them? Are you getting the best out of a female if she's the only one in the building? I'm not sure, right? So I think we have to continue to make hires in every area of an organization to continue to push that forward. And then there's the day-to-day. Look, the NBA life is not normal. You're on the road for a really long time. You have kind of odd hours. And as we know, I think those things and the balance of family and work is different for women. It just is, right? Like, no, I don't think many people ask male assistants or male head coaches, hey, like, you know, what are you doing about parenthood when you're on the road? And I not only thought about that all the time, but got the question all the time. And so I think the first to acknowledge that life looks different for a coach, you know, who's a parent, if they're a mother. And then how do we ultimately make the work-life integration conducive? No one in coaching, you know, thinks you have a 9-to-5, right? But for me, the importance is being able to do both things at the highest level possible. And I think driving some of those conversations in the NBA might be the next step. Certainly, it was conversations I was comfortable having within our organization. I hope other women are as well. And that would be, I think, maybe one of the next conversations of how do we not only get women in the league, but how do we help them to thrive in their work environment, because they tend to balance many, many things.
You mentioned, Lindsay, the pressure burden you felt about, am I leaving the NBA too soon, that you trailblazed your way in. There were a lot of people looking to you. I know you probably got calls and questions every day from peers you came up with in the women's basketball business who said, I might like to do that, or what's it like? And how much was that in your thinking when you decided to go back to USC, that did you have a bigger responsibility to see this through, maybe even at the expense of what was best for you, your family, your career? Yep. In the moment?
A ton. I mean, I can't overstate. I still think about it, right? Like, because that's part of, I think, who I am in coaching, is what is my greater impact. So when I first left Cal to go to the NBA, it's really hard, you know, to leave a locker room full of people you care about and you recruited and, you know, you're doing something with on a daily basis. And part of the ultimate reason of why I did go is I felt that my reach would be greater, that the women in that locker room, you know, who have talents in, you know, business and math, you know, who might want to be in analytics in the NBA one day. I mean, this idea that women who love sports and are talented, that there's a place for you in professional sports, whether it's coaching or something else. I thought that was part of my mission. And the like you said, the calls and the things that I was able to encounter every day in the NBA, I felt that I was having that impact, and also just the guys that I was able to coach, you know, and their, you know, vision of the world in terms of what women are capable of doing. Ultimately, though, I don't necessarily think that work is done, even though I'm, you know, the head coach at USC Women's Basketball. I hope that it's changed the narrative a little bit and changed the mentality around what women can do in the league. And on a day-to-day basis, you know, I think what we're going to do at USC Women's Basketball and the connections that I have in the NBA hopefully continues to push the next generation of women forward. But yeah, it's definitely that bigger impact is something that I'm conscious of and that I think about.
Were there ever any moments coming into the NBA, any situations where you go, I'm not so sure I feel welcome here, but I'm walking through, or this situation, whatever times you felt unwelcome by anybody?
I don't know that unwelcome would be the right word. I think, you know, you see people have to get more comfortable. Our first year, you know, pre-pandemic, when there were fans and everything, I would say this: anytime we were on the road in the arena, and you know, you're there well before the game, you're working out your guys and your time slots, you know, 2 hours ahead of the game, going from our locker room area to the court, for me, more times than not, was an issue, right? Like, we were probably given a credential at the beginning of the year that nobody ever wore, and I'd be walking kind of from the back to onto the court with, you know, three of our male assistants, and they'd all go through, and then a security guard would stop me and ask me for my credential, and I'm in the gear. But it doesn't mean they're bad people. I think that they just didn't think that I would be a coach walking on the court. So things like that. Unwelcome? No. People not quite ready or not quite comfortable? Maybe.
having that separate locker room, that's interesting. What was it? Did you, had you talked about that that would be part of it when you took the job? What was that like? Does it feel isolated to be getting dressed, prepared in a separate locker room, and then I guess you come back over to do the pregame stuff with the rest of the team? How did that work? Was that obviously different than anything you'd ever experienced as a coach? You were all in the same locker room.
Yeah, there were a lot of things that were different. I never experienced that. So before taking the job in Cleveland, you know, Kobe Altman and his you know, kind of front office staff, they were really, they were very proactive. Hey, you know, we're gonna build a locker room. It's, you know, it's overdue. We have a woman in the front office there, and so, you know, he said it's been long overdue. You need a place to, you know, shower here. And they were proactive, and I hadn't even thought about it. And I was like, oh, okay. But I'm more concerned, like, what meetings am I going to be on? What's this role going to look like? At the point I was in my career, I wanted to make sure I had just significant sort of basketball roles, which I always did. But that's where my mind was before I took the job. I didn't really think about the locker room. I thought about what type of substantive basketball stuff am I going to be doing, and how does this look as a mother? Those were the things that concerned me the most. So a lot of the stuff that just sort of happened on the road, I was like, oh, I hadn't really thought about this. On the road, I would have a separate locker room. And I will say it was sort of hit or miss arena to arena what it was like. There was one time I was put in a locker room with a mascot. And I was like, yeah, this is not going to work. And some of the other women in the league had their stories too. But I will say, you know, the coaches association and the league was very also proactive, saying, hey, tell us if something isn't up to par. We want it to be where, you know, everyone feels like they have a spot. The interesting thing, and I had actually had heard Becky speak on a panel right when I got the job at Summer League, and she talked about you know, her first couple years where, when she had a separate locker room, kind of being worried sometimes about, well, what am I missing? And, you know, did I not hear something that the other coaches heard? And having to kind of come to grips with, no, some things I'm not going to be on just because I'm a first-year assistant. And other things, you know, it's going to be because I was down the hall and we got to work on that. So I that was really helpful to me. And I think a lot about what it must have been like for Becky for the first several years with literally nobody else. And so much kind of respect for how she had to navigate that largely on her own. And now we have sort of had a group of female coaches that we could bounce things off one another. But ultimately, one of the best things for me coming into the league was that I'd gotten over myself. I'm not young. I wasn't trying to climb my way up. I sort of came in with this idea that, what value can I add to the organization? What value can I add to the league in terms of being a female, but more so on a day-to-day basis, what can I do? And so I let a lot of this kind of small stuff not bother me and tried to push the bigger concepts where I felt like there's room for growth in the league.
The decision to go back to take the USC job after 2 years in the NBA, you had been at Cal and had great success in the same conference. How differently were you reimagining how you could coach college basketball based on your experience in the NBA? How differently you're going to do it at USC?
Immensely. I mean, to be honest, Woj is part of the reason I took the job, because I think I'm going to be a whole different, better version of myself because of this experience. And it was shorter than I would have, you know, chosen, right? Another year or two in the NBA at least would have been cool. But ultimately, I think as I looked at this opportunity, I was never like, well, let me wait for this job to open up or let me wait for that job. But when the USC job opened, And also in conversations with the AD about, you know, he said, Lindsay, this is your blank canvas. You tell us what it looks like to have an elite women's basketball program, and kind of gave me a lot of autonomy. It made me think about it in a way that I am such a better coach for having spent 2 years in the NBA. I'm such a better coach for having essentially had the opportunity to step away for 2 years into a think tank of the greatest minds in basketball, almost kind of recraft, reimagine what I want to be as a head coach and how I can do it at the time when the NCAA is changing, which scares a lot of coaches. For me, it was almost a draw. Like this kind of you know, new paradigm of what the NCAA and college athletics should look like, I do think I can be on the forefront and a leader in, you know, kind of having a little bit more of a player-centered model, you know, where they are kind of sharing in the NCAA experience in a different way. That's what the NBA is. It's a partnership with the players. I think there's a lot of innovation going on that I can, you know, take some of that and bring it to the job now. So I'm going to be better because of this experience, and that's definitely one of the reasons I felt ready and kind of compelled to take the job right now.
When you talk to recruits now, or you talk to your players at USC, how intrigued are they with your NBA experience and want to talk to you about how it might relate to them, their careers, or just want to hear stories about what it's like to coach against KD, right?
Right. It's kind of all levels of it. Like some particularly, you know, parents have talked about just that willingness to kind of do a scary thing and go to the NBA and break some barriers, how they appreciate that relative to what their daughters might be sort of learning from that. I definitely weave kind of seamlessly into our workouts just reads on pick and roll, or why this spacing, and it's not, hey, this is what we did in the NBA, therefore we're going to do this. It's more just talking about the game from various vantage points. That's what I think that's where my benefit comes. And I watch a lot of WNBA, and I watched a lot of NBA before I was in the league, in men's college, women's college. So I'm always trying to pull and say, hey, this is why we're running this. This is where this can be useful to you. And so when I pull some NBA knowledge there, I think that they appreciate that, but it's more of how it can make them better. And then, of course, you know, there are some who are like, oh my gosh, you know Colin Sexton or what have you. And that's just, you know, kind of fun. But I really see this whole thing as what I can bring to them to make them better. And the more experiences you have at any level, the better you are. And that's really where I intend to kind of weave in the information. I certainly don't think you can run a college program exactly as an NBA runs. That wouldn't be successful, nor could you do it the flip side. But where I can bring in the knowledge I've learned about nutrition and when to give people time off and when to push them and how elite athletes train, those are the things I think I can bring into our everyday that will make this program better and will make the individuals in it, I think, have more opportunities, which is what I'm all about.
I remember talking to Billy Donovan when he had left Florida and had been in college basketball for a couple decades and was in Oklahoma City. And we were talking after maybe his first year there and about the things that you don't miss about college basketball. And I remember him, and I've heard this with others, I am not tethered to my phone. And I think you felt this. We had talked about this when you were in Cleveland, that, you know, he would say, when I leave practice, I don't have to run to my phone and see there's 17 missed calls and I've got to call this recruit and that. That's not part of it. And there is some, if I'm going to sit and eat dinner with my family, we can sit and eat dinner and I don't have to be texting. I don't have to be responding to it because it's all built around recruiting. What has that been like to come back to that? Because it is part, especially when you're starting out and you're out, you've got to hit the ground recruiting. What has that been like? And is that, you know, is that kind of a little bit of a sigh? Okay, I'm back to that again.
So I think the one person who may be on their phone more than me, Woj, is you. I think you have to be tethered to that thing and what you do too. But so here's how I see it. The NBA, you spend a lot of time working in the NBA, right? There's a lot of time where you're in it. And when you're in it, you kind of check everything else at the door and you're with the guys and you're with the team. But when you're not, whether it's you don't have a game that day or I don't have a scout when I'm home, I could put the phone down and be completely present. There's no question about it. And then there's an off season and things like that. Where I kind of was very intentional about this move back is that where college is a little bit conducive to my lifestyle sort of is the work-life integration. And what I mean by that is the ability to, I'm never going to probably put the phone down for several hours and say, you know, I'm checking work at the door and I'm only going to be with family. But I think I can weave, you know, my husband, Patrick, my son, Jordan, our son, Jordan, like into the mix a little bit more. So for example, you know, if we practice, you know, 2 to 4 this fall and Jordan gets out of preschool at 2:30, I may have, you know, our nanny pick him up, bring him to the end of practice. He sees the girls, he hangs out on campus and then we drive home together. Like I think I can integrate a little bit more. And I am going to be, I think, in control of There are going to be times where I say, hey, I'm doing something where I'm not on the phone. But there's no question that, you know, you come back to it, and recruiting is constant. Really, your own players and their needs are constant. Which
with the portal recruiting, yeah. Because you're let's be honest, you've got to keep recruiting your own players to
for
keep
sure.
them, because
yeah.
other people are.
For sure. But you also have to, if you don't call it recruiting, you have to invest in your own
right.
players all the time to be successful, because that's who I want to be anyway. Like, they are all my kids now, which is a great thing too. But I think that the biggest thing for me is the way I live my life, who I am as a coach, as a person, that is all partly recruiting too. Kids want to know who you are. Who am I going to play for? So I don't think I have to be texting every second. I don't think I have to be tweeting every second. I think I have to be living and doing the job and being who I am. And I hope that that draws people to want to play at USC, in addition to being on the phone when I need to be on the phone. But I'm hoping that in this version 2.0, that I can figure out what works for me and what works for us in our program. And it's just what it is. But I joke with, you know, I'm very, very close with JB, you know, the head coach of Cleveland. And every once in a while, I'll send him a text and be like, you know, so this is what I'm doing right now. You know, I'm watching highlights of an eighth grader. What are you doing? You know, and then he just laughs, and kind of we go back and forth a little bit. But it's a different world, but one that, you know, I'm jumping into eyes wide open.
Has any of your house hunting yet included looking to see where maybe some Dodgers live, some Angels yeah. live, right? You had pretty good experience with Major League Baseball players in Cleveland, right?
We did. So when we moved to Cleveland, we were super lucky that Carlos Santana and his family lived next door. So my son he calls them his sisters, the Santana girls. And then, you know, JaVale McGee was my neighbor for a little bit. My son was close with his daughter, of course. My son did not understand the NBA trade deadline at all. And then another Cleveland Indian moved in after. So,
I imagine JaVale like kids gathering in his yard and like climbing out. I imagine him in the yard like chasing kids around, playing ball. I imagine him being like a popular, like loving having like that whole, that's what I imagine him doing.
Well, but the funny thing is, a lot of people were like, do all the pro sports teams in Cleveland all just get together and hang out? I think it's just a small city with big sports kind of followings made it feel like everyone knows each other. I think we may rent out our house in Cleveland to one of the players. But no, here in LA, it's a little bit of a different story. I'm not sure that we'll be living, you know, next to any of the Lakers or Clippers or even the baseball players, but it is a neat time to be in LA relative to sports teams. I'll tell you that it's pretty exciting around here.
Well, there's a lot more coming at USC. You'll start your first season with the Trojans. I know you're off and running in recruiting. I know you can't talk about some of them, but I get the sense there's some good early success. I know you'll get this thing rolling and back among the elite as you did it at Cal. But this was fun, Lindsey. Lindsey Gottlieb, the new head coach of the Southern Cal Trojans. They don't like Southern Cal, right? They want USC or University of Southern California.
I think those are the two main ones. Although
right.
we do have a throwback Lisa Leslie jersey coming at some point, I believe next season, that's going to be featuring the Southern Cal. So we'll take it.
All right. Lindsey, this was a lot of fun.
Thank you, Woj. This has been awesome. Appreciate you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Woj Pod. A big thank you to my guest today, University of Southern California basketball coach Lindsey Gottlieb. Be sure to listen to new and archived episodes of the Woj Pod wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure also to listen to The Low Post with Zach Lowe, The Hoop Collective with Brian Windhorst, and of course, the Adam Schefter podcast with my good friend Adam Schefter. We'll catch you next time.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.